Well, welcome to another edition of our Outdoor Writers Roundtable. Larry Mueller here, going to spend our time today talking about a lot of things, certainly relating to our Wisconsin wildlife and conservation. Have the latest news from the Wisconsin DNR and the Natural Resources Board, and our three experts back with us once again. One of them, Patrick Durkin, freelance writer and editor and president of the Wisconsin Outdoor Communicators Association. Pat, welcome back.
Thanks, Larry.
Good to have you again. Yeah, good to see you. Dean Bortz, our guest as well, editor of the Wisconsin Outdoor News. And he's got he looks like he's outside. He's got a hood. Thanks for joining in. Where are you, Dean?
Well, I couldn't think of anywhere else I'd rather be right now, Larry. But the rest of the folks can't see us here. But when I came on, Pat mentioned I looked a little bit like Obi-Wan Kenobi with my outfit today. But the reason I'm inside, but it's cold up here, and I just will not turn the heat on in June. So I'm bundled up a little bit. I got my Led Zeppelin sweatshirt on and my Johnny Lang hoodie, and we're all set to go.
Okay.
If you hear any teeth chattering, it's me.
Okay. Tim Isley is with me in the studio, freelance outdoor writer, private landowner in Crawford County. Tim's one of the original founding members of the Wisconsin Outdoor Communicators Association, which was started back in 1976, if I'm not mistaken. Tim, and welcome.
You're right. Thank you, Larry. It's a privilege to be here.
And as we talk with our three experts and guys, I hope you'll join in, want to hear your favorite, maybe your favorite wildlife book you've read lately, or any wildlife topic that comes to your mind. We'll take a crack at it. Give a call at 800-642-1234. You could email to talk@wpr.org. And there's some important elections coming up this fall that are going to impact or will impact the DNR, namely the governor's race, but other things. Tim, what should people know?
Well, you're right, Larry. What's going to happen, of course, this fall is that we're going to have a new governor because Governor Evers is not rerunning. So no matter which way it goes, we're going to have a new governor, and people should keep that in mind because, you know, a lot of times we're thinking of issues and taxes and things like that. But basically, the person who's going to be governor is going to have a big impact over natural resources in this state. The governor appoints the Department of Natural Resources secretary. It didn't used to be that way, but Tommy Thompson got it changed so that the DNR was brought into the cabinet form. So the Natural Resources Board no longer appoints a secretary, but the governor does. So there's going to probably be a new secretary unless a new person who is elected retains the current secretary. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, though, then the governor also appoints members of the Natural Resources Board. And these are seven citizens from around the state who basically approve the regulations and set the policy for the DNR. So it's really important. And we've got two of the board members, Robin Schmidt, who's currently the chair, and Patty Schachner, whose terms are up in 2027. So there's going to be two appointments at least that are going to come up in 2027. So I think it's just important for people, no matter which way they vote, to start asking questions of the candidates and be aware of this. And, you know, I had the privilege of, in December, about 3 weeks before George Meyer passed away, I sat and had 3 hours with George just asking him some background and some of his thoughts. And one of the things he mentioned was that there is the idea that's been mentioned before about possibly splitting up the Department of Natural Resources, a separate conservation department, a separate environmental department. And he gave the example of where that happened over in Michigan. They did that, and they didn't add any more money, so they just split the departments, and it just split people up. And so rather than when you have, like, wetland zoning things, rather than having a warden there, an environmental person, a fish manager, a wildlife manager, when the DNR is all together, you've got them all together, and you basically multiply the forces there. So it's so important to ask questions of people and what their views are on the DNR and on natural resources. So I just ask people to keep that in mind.
Yeah. And maybe turn to Dean or Pat. What in your minds, what are the resource management issues that are likely to come up in this election cycle?
Go ahead, Dean.
All right. Well, I'll follow up with what Tim started down the road on there, and it's the hiring of the DNR secretary. We have had several opportunities since 1995. And if I remember right, 95 is when Tommy Thompson changed that through a budget bill process, which was didn't include a lot of public input. So since 95, we've been trying to get that change back to getting the Natural Resources Board in doing the hiring of the DNR secretary. So when it comes to campaigning between now and November, I can't imagine we're going to hear a lot of people talking about that, but the conservation community, if they ever get a chance to visit with the candidates, they really ought to pound on that one particular point and see if we can get a commitment from any candidate or every candidate to make that change if they were to get elected. It did come about a couple of times over the years. And we did get some promises from different candidates who did get elected, but they never followed through with it. So that'd be one thing I'd like to see changed. Now this isn't exactly what Tim was talking about as far as getting folks from different parts of the agency overlapping on things, but just the one example that I saw recently or heard about recently, we've heard about it before, but it came up again through the spring hearings and in the CDAC meetings up here where I live in Oneida Pilots County. Our local wildlife biologist is working with foresters and other parts of the agency so that when we do timber sales, we're getting more work done during those timber sales. Like, for instance, they'll take a log landing, and when the timber sale is done, they'll convert it to a wildlife management opening, or part of the skidding trails become hunting trails or stuff like that. So it's really nice to see that kind of work going on.
Pat, anything to add?
Yeah, I guess one thing that always I find interesting, Larry, is that as long as I've been covering the outdoors, every time, it seems like every time someone runs for governor, they always offer this idea Tim mentioned about splitting the DNR. I mean, you can go back and whether it's Mark Green in 2004 or you name it, there's always this talk of splitting the DNR. And I just kind of get to the point where I think it will always come back, running the DNR will always come back to leadership, not to the actual structure of the DNR. And so I just find those kind of things kind of disturbing and wasting our time when it comes to looking at the candidates and figuring out which one you want to vote for.
Yeah. Well, Jan in Ashland has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Larry and everybody. I live up in Ashland, Wisconsin, and I'm terribly concerned about the Brule Fish Hatchery. I got a phone call from them again about a week ago saying that if they don't get $70,000 for operating expenses, they're still going to close. And I'm really concerned because fishing and tourism is our only big industry up here in northern Wisconsin. And there are four counties, Douglas, Bayfield, Ashland, and Iron, that would go into poverty level if we don't get people to come up here for tourism. We're really concerned. It's a very little amount of money, only the cost of about, would be like one person's salary for a year. Only it isn't for that, it's for operating expenses. And that we need to get this idea brought back to the governor, who's still got a slush fund of money, to please just help us to keep our tourism alive here. If he doesn't, we're sending all this tax money down to Madison, but we don't get much of a result from that tax money. So we'd like very much to get some help with this small problem.
All right. Jan, thanks. Well, let's see. Dean, do you want to chime in there?
Sure. I'm a little familiar with that situation. I'd like to be a lot more familiar with it. if I could ever get a conversation with our fisheries chief or propagation supervisor, but I'm really getting jacked around on phone calls and emails from those folks, and I don't understand why I can't get a return call, but I haven't had a lot of luck with that. So I've been talking to other folks who are not with the DNR but are involved with the situation there. There's a lot more to it than just the Brule hatchery. The stocking protocol up there on Lake Superior has changed as well between splake and brown trout. And I'm not sure exactly how much time we want to spend on this, but I could really get into it kind of deep. But as far as the caller mentioned the Brule hatchery, I'm familiar with the Brule hatchery to an extent, not as much as some of the other folks who I know. What I'd like to see, I think, is the one-year funding come through for that hatchery, and during that next year, doing an assessment of the hatchery and whether it's really pulling its weight or whether it's not. I've talked to two retired DNR fish biologists who say that have told me the Brule hatchery should have been scrapped 20 years ago, that we get that same production out of other hatcheries. If that's the case, then maybe we shouldn't spend that money there, even though I know that the local folks would really like to have it, but maybe it really isn't providing that much of a benefit to the fishery if we can get the same production somewhere else. So I'd like to see, I guess I'm repeating myself here, but a funding for 1 year, take a look at it, see do we really need it, and then go from there.
Yeah. And I like that idea of at least giving it another year, and then let's look more deeply into it. Maybe changes could be made if need be to the hatchery, or, as you say, as long as other hatcheries are taking up the production, and that same area of the state is getting that benefit. Then that's Jan's worry, you know, we're not going to.
Right. Yeah. And I think the slack would be picked up by the Les Boyd hatchery in Bayfield is what I've been told.
Yeah. I like the idea of another year to really, and we're talking about it's a lot out of my pocket if I had to pay for the whole thing, but 70 grand is not really a whole lot of money.
Oh, come on, Larry, a man of your means, you can chill that out, no problem.
Oh, my goodness me. It just doesn't make any sense of not to do it for at least another year and then just take a darn close look at it. Jan, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Jonah in Oshkosh, your turn. Hi, Jonah.
Hi there. Can you hear me? I'm on speaker.
Yes, go ahead.
Right. So I want to know what sorts of hard-hitting, practical, specific questions you would like to ask the upcoming candidates for governor related to the DNR and the natural world. Because it's something I'm also very passionate about and have written to my elected representatives before about, because I know that if you just ask them, hey, do you believe in climate change? Like, they're going to get really defensive. So what actual, like, specific questions would you like to see asked of these folks? Thank you.
All right. Probably everybody could chime in on this one. Dean, you look like you're ready to pop right in, but we'll hear from the other guys too here.
Well, my first thought when the caller started running down his list of questions here was, I'm not sure that's a fair question for Larry to have to answer, because I mean, he's thinking about retirement. He's not thinking about elections. Come on. Don't put that on Larry. You know, here's one thing that and it's not just about this election. We could have been talking about this for 20 years. But the one thing I've been watching, I think I've been watching it because of I have land in Ashland County. It needs to be logged. And for probably 15, 18 years, I have friends in the logging industry. I say, hey, Theo, how about if I cut some of this and you haul it to a mill? Ah, no. Market's terrible. Don't cut now. Well, the market has never gotten any better. I mean, it's not it. So now I'm sitting with some timber that needs to be cut and should have been cut probably as much as 10 years ago. And I really am having trouble finding a market for, you know, what do you do with tamarack and spruce? I mean, or there's really not a lot of market for it. And as I've been watching this, I've been seeing our paper mills shutting down, our veneer mills shutting down. And so we're just losing wood markets left and right. And I guess my one question would be to any candidate, how can we revive our timber markets, our timber industry? We need to cut wood, and we just don't have a lot of outlets for it anymore.
You know, that's a good report, a good comment, and I'm going to let our other two guys ponder that for just a second. Our guest, Tim Isley, Dean Bortz, and Pat Durkin. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Thanks for joining us today for our roundtable discussion on the outdoors with Tim Isley, freelance outdoor writer, Dean Bortz, editor of Wisconsin Outdoor News, Pat Durkin, freelance writer, editor, and president of the Wisconsin Outdoor Communicators Association. Questions or comments, join in. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. And as we broke, we'd had a caller asking, what specific natural resource questions should we ask of our gubernatorial candidates? And Dean had a good one about forest management. And Tim, what question would you ask?
Well, I think it's a really good question. What should you ask? And I think there's a couple of things. Number one, what do they think as far as splitting the Department of Natural Resources? Do they see it that it should be combined or separated? And if so, why? The biggest question, of course, is funding right now. The DNR is short on funds. So how do you come up with the funds to fund it? You know, there's been examples in other states, Minnesota and Missouri, where they have a percentage of the sales tax that funds natural resources. It makes perfect sense because we all benefit from a DNR, not just those who hunt and fish. And the hunters and fishermen basically are paying for that out of their license money. So I think how do they see funding the DNR? What could we do? The appointment of the secretary, would they like to see the appointment of the secretary return to the Natural Resources Board? Or would they like to have the governor appoint the secretary if they were elected governor? It's just by having the Natural Resources Board do it, it just keeps it at arm's length from pure politics. And I think that's so important. And last, just referring to the board, what would you look for in a Natural Resources Board member? You're going to be appointing people. What do you look for in these members that you're going to be appointing? So those are some of the questions that I would want to ask.
All good questions. Pat, what about you?
I think one of the interesting things about the governor's race is, you know, as an outdoor writer, outdoor reporter, what I always find is that these people who are at that level of government, the governor, when you ask them a question about the outdoors, most of them are not outdoor oriented. They have a hard time even, you know, really quickly get into the weeds with their questions. So I think one of the things that will be interesting is the one candidate out there right now that we know best, just based on his time around, is Tom Tiffany. And I know in Congress, he's been a congressman for a number of years now, and he has tackled some issues in Congress that I think are going to leave him with some good questions to answer. And one that I asked him a few years ago was, why was he supporting a bill to get rid of the Pittman-Robertson Act? And for listeners who don't know, the Pittman-Robertson Act, it's an excise tax we've been levying on firearms and ammunition since the 1930s, and we've been filing it on archery equipment since the 1960s, and it provides a lot of funding for our natural resources programs, you know, nationwide. And Wisconsin gets a lot of money from that because we have so many hunters and fishermen buying licenses, and that's how they allocate it. So Tiffany was actually supporting getting rid of that at one point. And so I think it's going to be interesting to see how we address this, because a lot of Democratic candidates, when I look at their resumes and what I've heard them talking about, you just realize that a lot of these folks on both sides of the aisle just really don't understand the Wisconsin outdoor scene very well. And they'll be kind of, I think, trying to play catch up once they're governor.
Yeah. Jane in Suamico, we'll go to you. Jane, hi.
Yes. Hello. Thanks for taking my call, Larry. I wanted to ask your experts about CAFOs, concentrated animal feeding operations. I've been to a number of public hearings where there will be hundreds of people there not wanting the expansion and the growth of CAFOs in their counties like Kewaunee County or Brown County. And yet it seems like the DNR doesn't have the regulations it needs to prevent the growth that's becoming so damaging to our water.
Yeah. Good points. Pat, do you want to comment on that, or Dean? Pat, go ahead.
Yeah. Gosh, you know, Larry, this is another one of those issues where you always look at and go, where do you start? You know, and like Kewaunee, we've been dealing with Kewaunee and the problems they have with CAFOs over there for at least 15 years. I remember they probably, or in some cases, are still needing to get their water from private sources that is out of their own wells. And so I just don't know how Wisconsin can tackle other questions we have facing us without really knowing and digging into how much of this we can allow to get into our water systems around the state, because it varies so much by region depending on what kind of soils we have in those areas and all the runoff and inspections required. It just goes on and on. And I guess where I take it down to my household, every time this kind of issue comes up, I look at my wife and say, this is why I hunt and fish, because I at least have an idea where our food's coming from. And I'm trying our best not to put even more strain on these operations that have to raise our beef force and our pork, whatever it might be.
Yeah. Dean, you were going to add something.
A couple of things. First one, short one, is that we have a couple of readers who really track the manure runoff and spillage into streams, and they're on my back here a little bit about why we aren't doing more about reporting on those situations, and we will be here. But besides the groundwater, we have had, I think since January, five reports from the DNR, notices from the DNR about manure runoffs into streams around the state. And I guess I know how it happens, but I just don't know why. And it's, a lot of it is coming from the CAFOs, the runoffs coming from the large farms, is why we don't have a better feel for when these circumstances can arise that would cause the runoffs, like spreading liquid manure on frozen land, and then we get a rain or snow melt, and the stuff's going to run off. And I think the other thing I think is, so Pat, Tim, and I, we pay a lot of attention to the DNR, but a lot of this is really handled by the Department of Agriculture. And it just seems to me, for the little bit of contact that I've had with the Department of Ag, is that there does not seem to be a lot of enthusiasm, I'll say, for handling some of these situations within the Department of Ag. And I'm wondering if we shouldn't somehow try to get a better handle on that.
Yeah. Tim, you were nodding in agreement there a little bit.
Well, I think it's really an important question. And we have land in Crawford County, and right now that's an area that has this karst geology where you've got these fractured rocks, and the stuff that they're spreading on the land, it can be going right down into your well water. I think a lot of this goes back, again, to the legislature and to legislators. Until they pass the laws that allow the DNR or DATCAP to come down harder on CAFOs and change the regulations. Right now, I think they're hamstrung. Now, I'm seeing some wonderful reporting by some of the local reporters over there, Jillian Pomplin and Gaze Mills and Tim Hunt in Viroqua, and they're writing about these things. There's problems. We need to get the legislature, I think, to be aware of this and to change the laws and make it easier for the DNR and DATCAP to come in. You know, we're changing from the small family farm to the big industrial farms, and that's where I think we have problems. But if we spoil our water, I mean, you need water, you need air. These are basics.
Yeah. Jane, those are the comments, and thank you very much for calling. Let's turn to Brett in Madison. Hi, Brett.
Hey, Larry. Great show. As always, glad you got two experts on. One of the things on these big livestock factories, the good news is they're regulated under the Clean Water Act. So the state actually has more tools than smaller farms. And don't forget the county level, county conservationists. In Dane County, we enacted a ban on spreading manure on liquid, on frozen ground after we had the big fish kills in southwestern Dane County. And we put in two regional manure treatment facilities that clean up the poop from 10,000 cows and remove that phosphorus from Lake Mendota and the chain of lakes. So the county is obviously more, you know, the conservationists know the farmers on a first name basis and can have the best relationship with those farmers. But more broadly, having moved here in 88 and done conservation since then, you're absolutely right. We need somebody who hunts, fishes, boats. And I would, you know, have these gentlemen and the Wildlife Federation or other groups send a conservation questionnaire. Wisconsin leads the nation conservation. Gaylord Nelson founded Earth Day. John Muir started the Sierra Club. There's no place else that has more of a conservation ethic that Aldo Leopold talked about than Wisconsin. And we need to put the conserve back in Wisconsin and honor George Meyer and other service to the DNR.
Brett, thank you very much for calling. The Knowles Nelson, what are your thoughts there on the purchase, land purchase? I guess we lost Brett there. Brett, I think, was going to ask about the Knowles Nelson fund, which is, that's fine. We'll if that comes up again, we can address it as we move along. Brett, thanks very much for calling. And again, you can join in too, 800-642-1234. Email to talk@wpr.org. Scott emailed us. He'd love to hear you guys' thoughts on changing the season dates of the gun deer season. He's hunted over 50 years, took his grandson last year, and the season isn't the same as it was when he was a kid, and he thinks something needs to change.
How old is he?
He's hunted for over 50 years.
Well, because I guess I keep wondering, Larry, when I hear that kind of question is, I'm 70 now, and I've been hunting since 1971, deer hunting. And we've always had the 9-day season starting the day before the weekend before Thanksgiving. So this is one of those eternal questions that burns through Wisconsin deer hunting. We're always debating when to open the gun deer season. And I've kind of gotten the point now where I just let people talk about it and don't weigh in myself, because it's, I think we're always going to come right back to where we started. You know, it's been that way since at least the 1950s, and I just don't see it changing.
Yeah. Yeah. Tim?
Well, I think it's set by statute, and I think, again, we've got to get the legislators to realize that people might want to change. To me, it makes perfect sense to move the gun deer season up earlier in November. Number one, if you have too many deer and if you want to reduce the deer population, allow the gun hunters to have some chance at the deer during the rut. That's when the bow and arrow hunters are always out. And so to move it up, and when it's better weather, trying to get more, you know, as hunters age, some of the older hunters don't want to be out way late in November. I think it's been brought up. It's been a proposal before. I think it's something that's time to look at. And even if the bow hunters said, well, we like it the first week of November, you can't have it then be fair. Switch. One year the bow hunters go the first week of November, the next year the gun hunters go. I think there are modifications that could be made, and I think it makes perfect sense.
All right. There you go. We have more callers coming online. The number's 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. The spring turkey season, of course, is over with. And looking back, I can't look back too fondly because I was sick for 2 weeks and couldn't even come to work. And so I couldn't go. I couldn't go out during my seasons, but I think it was overall, it was a pretty good year, was it not?
Yeah. Good season.
And I think, you know, I think about the turkey season, that's probably, for many hunters now, that's probably their, if they're going to choose between turkey and deer, I think a lot of people would choose turkey because of the way the system, the seasons are set up. You guys,
yeah,
are...
I tell you, Larry, I think the Wisconsin DNR and the Turkey Federation, anyone else who had anything to do with setting up the structure of Wisconsin's turkey season in spring, I just give them 100, you know, an A+. We have more turkey hunting opportunity in this state than any other state in the country. And we do it. The DNR does a very good job of spreading them out. I have my own story now about having someone else interfere with me on a hunt, but those kind of cases are pretty unusual when you get somebody messing up your hunt. You know, they spread the pressure out pretty good, and you know, we you might want to nitpick here and there, but we just had our 7th best turkey season ever in terms of turkey registration. So I guess I'm a big cheerleader on that one. I actually have a hard time deciding sometimes what I like better, deer hunting or turkey hunting.
Yeah. Tim?
Sure. I'd go along with Pat on that. I think it was 47,704 is the preliminary registrations, which, as Pat said, is the 7th best season. But and this is the 50th year, 50th anniversary year,
it's
of course.
It's amazing, isn't it?
You had Paul Smith on talking about that. 50th anniversary year of the modern wild turkey hunt. But again, everything when you talk about a hunting season, to me, the importance is quality. You know, it's not so much in how you bag, but quality of the hunt. And by setting it up, but we've got the time zones and the time periods and the zones to spread the pressure out. I think that is so important, and I think we have to realize that. We want to keep that. And, you know, right now the DNR Turkey Management Committee is looking at a brand new management plan. It lasts for about 10 years. So they're looking at everything. They're looking at zones. They're looking at permit levels. They're looking at everything else. So it's going to be interesting to see what comes out of that. I think they may have some public hearings a little later this summer, and then it'll go to the board for adoption. But that plan, hopefully, will continue with the time periods and the zones, because I think that really produces a quality hunt.
Well, and the restoration, as we were talking about on the show with these guys, is probably the best success ever in the country for a restoration program.
Right, and they used 100% wild birds, and that was the important thing. And Ron Nicholas, Charlie Burke, John Nelson, Ed Frank, these are the people at the DNR who put this whole thing in place, and many of the other wildlife and law enforcement and research people, they all deserve a pat on the back.
You know, and I wanted to mention, you've got a book that's going to be coming out in the next year, and maybe just spend a minute or two here and talk about the book itself, because what reminded me of it is that you've got a pretty good story of that, but a whole series of stories about conservation.
Well, thank you, Larry. I mean, I've been around for a long time, been freelancing for many, many years, and to me, there are certain things that stand out about Wisconsin that makes it very unique, the people and the events. And so that's why I wanted to take a bunch of these stories that I think are so important. The Armistice Day storm, the hunters who were out and survived the Armistice Day storm, November 11th, 1940. People who knew Aldo Leopold. Wisconsin is special because of Aldo Leopold. And somebody mentioned earlier, you know, Ernie Swift and all these other leaders. But Aldo Leopold, what was he like? People who knew him. The biologists, Ron Nicholas, Charlie Burke, and those people, Ed Frank, who brought the wild turkeys back. And then they went out and they trapped rough grouse, three rough grouse, to trade to Missouri for every one wild turkey. Those types of things. The Natural Resources Board, the importance of the Natural Resources Board and why it's there. To me, those are the things that make Wisconsin special, and I'm just trying to put some of those stories that I think are important, and I'm putting them in a book that we're finishing the editing now and hopefully have it out later this year, but thank you.
Yes. Yeah, I won't be able to interview you for that one. I'm kind of sorry for
that
because because I will not be doing it. Lee Rayburn will be talking with you. I'm pretty sure of that, but maybe I'll call in that day and ask you, I don't know, I'll think of something crazy to ask. Oh, man. Tim Isley, Dean Bortz, and Pat Durkin, our guests. And you can join in. What are your thoughts about conservation in our state or hunting, other issues relating to our natural resources? Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. You could email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Thanks so much for joining us today on WPR. Larry Mueller here with our guests, our outdoor writers and editors, Tim Isley, Dean Bortz, and Pat Durkin. Great to have them back. And certainly, if you have a question or comment, I hope you'll join in. Mike emailed us, what are your thoughts about using science to make decisions? Badgers are protected because they're the state animal. Sandhills are protected because they've been mistaken for other birds. How much science is there behind this protection or this work?
Well, I think, you know, there's an awful lot of science behind this if we choose to follow it and incorporate it into our policy making and decision making. But unfortunately, so often, when you get into the downside of democracy is that you don't just rule with whatever it might be, you know, your criteria. So you do see, you know, I think deer hunting is a prime example of we consistently ignore the biology and the science behind that. We even though you probably won't find any species of wildlife that's been more studied than white-tailed deer.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Mike in Fond du Lac wanted to comment on something. Mike, hello.
Hi. I wanted to comment on the Natural Resources Board. At the present time, none of the members of the Natural Resources Board have been confirmed by the state Senate. The legislature has chosen to play games with confirming individuals based on whatever parameter that they choose. And when we elect a new governor, the new governor will have the option of appointing all six Natural Resources Board members at one time because none of them have been confirmed. And the way it's set up, they are to be confirmed in staggering basis, so they come and go at different times. People need to understand this, that the legislature is, in my opinion, messing with the way natural resources are managed in the state of Wisconsin.
Mike, thanks very much. And Tim, I was going to ask you about the agenda on the Natural Resources Board, but first maybe comment on Mike's comment.
Well, right. Those Natural Resources Board members need to be confirmed by the Senate. And so the problem is that they are holding up a lot of those confirmations. And I've sat through some of those Senate hearings when they had people had really good backgrounds in natural resources, and instead they didn't like it because some of these people wanted to buy land up north, and some of the legislators didn't want more public land up north. So they're sort of interfering, I think, with the system that we have had in place for many, many years.
So what is on the agenda? There's actually a board meeting later this month, if I'm not mistaken, on June 24th, I believe. What's on that agenda?
Well, the board normally it meets on the fourth Wednesday of each month. And so I know one of the things I think they're going to be getting a report on on chronic wasting disease. And then normally there's that usually come up with different things on land purchases. Although right now, because of the Knowles and Nelson fund running out of money and not being reapproved. The land purchases are not going to be very, very big on the agenda anymore. So each of the meetings, I haven't looked at the specific ones coming up next week yet, other than I know that they're supposed to be getting the chronic wasting disease report.
We've got other callers online here. Jim in Bayfield, let's go to you. Jim, hi.
Hi, Larry. I've got a story I think you'll find interesting, the happy ending. I had a farm, still do, southwestern Marquette County. And about 50 years ago, a couple of DNR employees, I think they're out of Dodgeville, said, would you mind if we brought in, release some turkeys on your farm? We think the habitat's about right. We think you're a little too far north, but we'd like to try it. Well, I now live in Bayfield, and we've got turkeys all over up here. So happily, their skepticism was not well placed, and talk about a success story.
That's a great story, Jim. Thank you so much for calling. It just absolutely amazes me to be in Bayfield County and see turkeys wandering around. I never thought that would happen. I never thought they would be that tough. They could survive the winters.
And I don't think DNR thought originally either, because turkeys traditionally were on a line from Prairie du Chien up to Green Bay. That's where we found wild turkeys, south of that line. And I think the DNR originally, when they brought the wild turkeys back in, they didn't think they'd be that far up north, but they've proved them wrong.
Yeah. Pat in Oshkosh, we'll go to you. Hi, Pat.
Hi, guys. Hi, Larry. Thanks. Just a quick pulse of your readers on the wolf hunt. And should we be so excited as the turkeys have overpopulated? I mean, what's the status of the wolves? Do we hope for that?
And Dean, go ahead. What are you hearing from your readers?
We won't have a season trapping or hunting. It's not just a wolf hunt. It's a season that allows trapping and hunting if we're able to get that going. But what we're waiting for is for them to be federally delisted, meaning that they have to come off the endangered species list. Once they come off the endangered species list, then the state can go ahead and enact the wolf plan that they have in place. The last I heard in the last week or two is that there's some sort of an appropriations bill going on where the bill that is in place at the federal level, Congress and the House of Representatives, has been put into this appropriations bill or budget bill or reparations, some sort of a bill that's going on right now. Now, it's probably not going to make it through there. We've had trouble getting this. We've been working on this for, 12, 14 years, and it just has never made it through the federal process. So if that day ever happens, then we have a wolf season framework in place. But until that day happens, we won't be doing anything on a wolf season.
Well, I know you guys have some questions for me, and maybe this would be a point to come up with.
I've been waiting for this for 48 minutes.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, let's start with Patrick. Patrick, have you got one?
Sure. I got one. One thing that's always amazed me, Larry, and I – people think I'm joking here and just trying to get a laugh, but I've always been impressed in the time I've known you and appearing on your show. I think we date back almost 30 years now.
Yeah.
But I've always found fascinating was that whether it's my readers or my aunts and my mom, I have to ask you, why do women of all ages find you so sexy?
I'm not sure that that's exactly a true statement. I think I would say that guys and gals, you know, when you're on 59 years on the air, you know, people get to know you, and because I'm out with smart people like you, I come off sounding like I know what I'm talking about too sometimes. I think that's probably the reason why folks have enjoyed the program. I don't know if they find me sexy, but it would be hard to look at me and say, well, there's a sexy guy.
all I can say, Larry, is I can always tell by their questions, they find you far more interesting than me.
Well, that's all I've got to say on that subject.
well, maybe I've got something to say about that. Pat, I think you ought to load the Austin Powers comment on him.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, to quote the Austin Powers movies, you know, men want to be you and women want to be with you.
Well, I just don't.
Larry better not ever start wearing a red and green suspenders or he'll never.
I thought you were going to ask me about my best fishing experience or something.
That's too predictable.
I could tell that story. Well, all right, Dean, did you have a question too?
Well, I actually have two of them, and you can choose between the two as far as which one you want to, or if you want to do both, that's fine. But the one would be, what is the most outrageous or unusual gardening accident that you've been involved in or heard about? Or I heard that you like to fish muskies. So if you have what's your most crazy muskie fishing story, whatever it might be.
All right. Well, I can do both of those pretty quickly. This goes back some years, but there was a colleague, a professor at the University of Wisconsin, who was involved in agriculture, especially in South America, and he wanted some, this is a gardening thing, a very terrible thing. He wanted to get some really good chemicals for applying on his lawn, and he got some that he wasn't supposed to have. And then he went out and put it on his lawn while he was wearing no shirt and shorts. And his body shut down in about 5 days.
Oh, no.
And he was dead.
Oh, wow.
So, and that was bad. And the fishing story, I caught 90 inches of muskie and two casts.
Wow.
A consecutive cast. Fishing with my dad, which has made it even better.
Oh, great.
Yeah. We were fishing on Lake Winter, and I caught a 47-inch muskie, measured it, put it back in the, took a picture, put it back in the water. And then we were just sitting there, and I got a couple cans of pop out of the cooler, and while we're talking and just floating along, I just, out of habit, picked up my rod and threw the lure out the side of the boat, not paying any attention and talking, and boom, one hit, and that was a 43-inch.
Ooh. Wow.
So you had them all up. That
congrats.
Was nice.
I haven't caught 90 inches worth of muskies in 5 years.
So that was probably, and it was with my dad, which made it all the better. Well, you guys, I tell you, here we are. We're out of time. I can't get your question in. Tim Eisley, Dean Bortz, and Pat Durkin, I am really going to miss talking with you guys, but I'm hoping that you'll be able to keep going with Lee, and I really have appreciated your time here. Pat Durkin, outdoor writer, president of the Wisconsin Outdoor Communicators, Tim Eisley, freelance outdoor writer, and Dean Bortz, editor of Wisconsin Outdoor News. It's been a lot of fun talking with these guys. I started with them way back in the day when the DNR was in a crunch and wouldn't let people speak. And I thought, let's get some other guys on then to talk. And they've been doing it ever since. I'm Larry Mealer.
Thank you, Larry.
Thanks, Larry.
Thank you.